that, I think it's time we can get move on to our second talk here. So our presenter will be Lyle Campbell on behalf of a large team of people talking about new knowledge findings from the catalog of LCAP.
Thanks, Gwen. Thanks, Janet. Janet's my next door neighbor, and she's signing for us. I shouldn't say this, it'll sound crass, but I don't have many of my talks choreographed. This is going to be exciting. Actually, this is a talk from several of us, as you can see. Somehow I ended up giving it because several of us aren't here, and the others of us are already giving other talks. So I will be the presenter, and hopefully they will answer all the questions. So this is about new knowledge from the Catalog of Endangered Languages. The goal, you've heard some of this already, if you were here for Raina Heaton's talk just a minute ago. The goal of this talk is to report findings from the Catalog of Endangered Languages, fondly called LCAT, what we know today, the kinds of new knowledge produced by creating the catalog. We'll start by sort of, the audience warm-up. Did you know, and I think talking to the choir, preaching to the choir, you must know some of this. So did you know that over 3,000 languages are endangered? In fact, the catalog has 3,176, 76% of all languages. 46. And did you know that 639 languages that we know because we know their names, and many, many more probably disappeared in history, but 639 languages are extinct. 227 of these known languages became extinct recently since 1960. That's over 35% of all extinct languages became extinct in this recent time. That's about 10% of all languages, current languages that we know about. Whole language families are extinct. All of the languages representing exactly 100 families and isolates are just gone. So of the about 420 language families and isolates in the world, 24% of the linguistic diversity is just lost. You knew all that, right? So the need for the catalog, Raina talked about, I'll mention it again, the endangered language crisis is one of the most important problems facing humanity today, posing moral, practical, and scientific issues of enormous proportion. This is what our conference is all about. That's what we're all about as we do this work. The Endangered Language Catalog goals, to repeat them, to provide a definitive, authoritative, and up-to-date resource on the endangered languages of the world, and to provide new knowledge, that's what we're talking about today, as soon as we get through this background stuff. And then also these other goals provide resources for communities whose languages are in danger, to supply information missing in other sources, kinds of fields of information that people interested in endangered languages would like to know about but aren't really available in other sources. To correct information that's missing in other sources or in our sources, to correct errors, misidentification of language, missing languages, and all the sorts of things that need to be sorted out, classification of languages. To update and correct information about things like the numbers of speakers, the location of the languages, and so on. And we provide a degree of language endangerment scale, and in production, a documentation index for each of the endangered languages. The goals of the catalog also include to provide this information in an accessible, updatable, sustainable form, to promote public awareness, to foster support, to increase resources, and to inform the public and scholars alike. So you've heard some of this history. The project is supported by the National Science Foundation, Google.org, the benevolent arm of Google, built the platform. And so the catalog is on this website, endangeredlanguages.com. I assume many of you have been there, and I assume you'll all go there as soon as this talk is over. The Endangered Language Project is directed by Helen Arister-Dry and Tony Arister at EMU, Eastern Michigan University, a linguist, and by me here at the University of Hawaii, Manoa. And I'll skip some of this because Raina just talked about it. The division of labor was that EMU does Africa, Australia, and all the technology stuff, and that Hawaii does the rest of it, or the catalog. So what is an endangered language? That is, how does a language get itself into our catalog? LCAT criteria, which you can see on the language endangerment scale, include absolute number of speakers, intergenerational transmission, are the children learning the language, what are the ages of the youngest speakers, are numbers of speakers declining, are the domains of use declining, and what are the numbers of speakers relevant to the ethnic, relative to the ethnic population. And we have a sort of a magical algorithm which gives us a clunky score, but nevertheless it does give us a score, where we pit all of these things against each other and weight them in such a way that we come up with an index of just how endangered languages are. So if languages make it on those criteria, then they get included in our catalog. What's the catalog's intended audiences and users? Well, it's basically everybody. We'd like it to reach out to school children to inform them about the plight of endangered languages. We'd like it to go to educators. We definitely want it to go to the media and to funding agencies so that they can deploy their resources in a much more efficient and appropriate way. And of course it's aimed at community members. At the bottom of it all, we really want resources, we want the catalog to function as a resource for communities who are facing, dealing with problems of loss of language. And of course it's aimed at linguists and scholars of all sorts and students. Well, the catalog, as Raina explained, the database behind our catalog provides lots of information from lots of sources. There's just one typical one early in the catalog. We don't have from these sources information about things like domains of use and such things, but we do have a range of speaker numbers. So we have, as you see, a number of sources, and we're increasing this. This is all from stage one, phase one. So now we're reaching out to get better information from all of the best sources. But you can see that it represents a range of opinion, or at least a range of reported things about absolute number of speakers in this particular case. Okay, so now to the stuff we're supposed to talk about. What have we learned? What's the new knowledge that's come out of constructing the catalog of endangered languages? Well, I apologize, but borrowing from Donald Rumsfeld's terms, we'll start talking about known knowns. So what do we know that we know now because of what we've done? Well, as I mentioned, the evidence from the catalog shows that by the criteria we use, there are 3,176 languages currently that are endangered. This is out of the world total of 6,909 endangered languages. That's Ethnologue's figure. And that's 46% of all languages then are endangered by the criteria of the catalog. This is interesting because this 46% is quite near the often cited 50% scenario of languages expected to become extinct or doomed by the end of the century. But it's far from the 90% scenario that we sometimes speak of. And of course, being in our catalog doesn't necessarily mean that a language will be dead or doomed by the end of the century. It just means it's endangered now. And possibly, we don't know how long it will take some of these languages to improve or decline in terms of viability. So the date can be misleading in terms of whether these will all become extinct by the end of our century, current century. I'll focus a little bit on languages that have fewer than 10 speakers. This is only one thing we could focus on, but I think we could all agree probably that languages with fewer than 10 speakers are in trouble and possibly highly endangered, and perhaps many of them, perhaps most of them, perhaps all of them, won't survive even past our lifetime, so that these might be where we would want to have special attention and focus. So in the catalog, there are some 457 languages with fewer than 10 speakers. That's 14% of the endangered languages, and that's about 7% of all languages. But this figure is relative. In fact, it's misleading because if you look at the sources carefully, for 203 of these languages, they report fewer than 10 speakers, and they agree that there are fewer than 10 speakers. Mm-hmm. But for another 91 of these languages, different sources vary by reporting that either they have fewer than 10 speakers or they have no speakers at all. So they do have fewer than 10 speakers, but that may also include zero. So that, if you put that together, that's 294 languages. And then it gets more interesting or less, or more distressing, however you want to look at it. Sources from another 113 languages also vary, but in this case, they vary in that some say fewer than 10 speakers and some say more than 10 speakers. We assume that the more recent sources for many of these are reporting smaller numbers, and that probably the fewer than 10 speakers is accurate in many of these cases, although certainly not accurate in all of them. If we add those together, then we get 407 languages with fewer than 10 speakers. And then we go on and we notice that, in our catalog, we also have 50 languages listed, which some people would call extinct. We call them silent languages. These are languages which have no known current speakers. Perhaps the last known speakers were not found recently. So that we don't know, we err on the side of being generous that these languages may have speakers, but they probably don't because they're reported not to have any known speakers. Well, if we add that 50 languages that many people would simply say they have no speakers and so they shouldn't be in the catalog, then we get our figure of 457 languages with fewer than 10 speakers, of which, of course, 141 may actually have no speakers at all and shouldn't be in the catalog if you were very, very strict about what you would put in. I hope you followed that convoluted sort of thing about speakers with less than, languages with less than 10 speakers. If we remove those 50 languages which are agreed to be reported to have no known speakers, then we're down to a catalog of 3,126 languages, of which 407 have fewer than 10 speakers and so on. That's just an illustration of the relativity of some of the things we have to deal with in dealing with a catalog. When Raina said that we handle the difficult questions by putting in a range of opinion, the catalog errs on the side of caution. So if there is a situation where many people say this is a single language and many other people say when some people distinguish two separate languages and other people say they're only dialects of a single language, and it's simply not clear by current information available to us, then we go ahead and put both of them in, representing the range of opinion. What that means is that we have lots of cases that might actually turn out to simply be dialects of other languages, but because the information isn't particularly clear right now, we err on the side of representing those, but the opinion is in there. So the absolute number of endangered languages may be fewer than 3,000 some odd because of the fact that we include these cases where there's controversy about whether it's dialect versus language. That's how we deal with that tough question. So back to the start. So we know that there are 639 languages we know the names of that are already extinct and have no speakers at all. Almost 10% of all languages. Of these extinct languages, as I mentioned, 227 became extinct recently, since 1960. And conversely, 383 of these became extinct before 1960. What that means, and we don't know the date of 29 of them, so what that means is that if in all time, if it took thousands and thousands of years of languages we know the names of to become extinct, and then in the last 50 years, 35% of all of them become extinct. It's absolutely clear, thanks, I saw that sign. It's absolutely clear that the rate of extinction is highly accelerated. And that's what we have always known, but now we can give some numbers to it. We can clearly see that rate is very, very accelerated. There's an important corrective here, and I want to say this emphatically. If you look at the catalog, what we have is that the frequently repeated claim that one language goes extinct every 2 weeks just isn't supported. In the catalog, we find that on average, only about a third of a language goes extinct each month, not each fortnight, and not each 2 weeks. And that comes out to about one language every 3 months, or about 4.3 languages per year. This is a lot different from one every 2 weeks. This is important. And this is not only true for right now, but it seems to be true for the entire range of time we looked at for the last 50 years. That is, this rate has been constant more or less for the last 50 years. Highly accelerated language extinction, but not a language going extinct every fortnight. Let me read this part because I think this is important. These losses are still horrendous for all the familiar reasons that we all know about. There is no need to continue to repeat the inaccurate claim, which probably will get us in trouble eventually with media and other disciplines. What we see is shocking enough. If you just look at the list of languages that have only 10 speakers, or the languages that have become extinct recently, you should be shocked. That's horrendous and shocking. And if you look at the rates that I talked about, it confirms the crisis, the ongoing crisis of language loss. We don't have to repeat the figure of one language every 2 weeks. It's bad enough without it. So continuing with our known knowns, we also know the whole language families simply have no languages left anymore. As I said, 100 language families are gone. 24% of all the diversity of the world is gone. Of these, 28 of those language families became extinct since 1960. So 28% of extinct language families became extinct in recent times. Again, confirming what we know, that the rate of language extinction is highly accelerated. Now the known unknowns. This is a picture of a group of uncontacted people in the Amazon who have been flown over and taken a photograph of. There are uncontacted groups, depending on which figure you look at, around 60 in South America, most in Brazil. We know the languages that are spoken by some of these groups, but we don't have any idea what the language is of many of these groups. We just do not know. And most of these are very small and isolated and probably highly endangered. So there are they're simply languages we don't know anything about because they're not contacted. There are many other languages which we have such scant information about that we know so little. We just need more information, more documentation. And then for 332 languages in our catalog, there are no numbers at all for numbers of speakers. That's about 10% of our 3,000 some odd endangered languages. It's about almost 5% of languages in the world. Ethnologue has 277 languages that it doesn't have speaker numbers for. That's about 4%. So most of these, if we don't have any information on them, are probably highly endangered as well, even though we have no speaker numbers at all. And they don't figure then well into the kinds of stuff we're talking about, but they should. So that's part of the goal of the catalog, is to reach out and get information about these things we don't know about, the known unknowns. The sources we have in a lot of cases are just out of date and inaccurate for a good number of languages, and so we need to update the information and get accurate current information. We don't know a lot about the ages of the youngest speakers, the domains of use, and whether languages are being learned by children. For a lot of languages, we need to find out this information as well. And we don't know what we'll find out in the next 2 years as we continue the LCAT project. Hopefully, someone will give this report 2 years from now or 5 years from now, and we'll have a whole different set of information that we can add to it and perfect it. We want you to join in with us, please, to help this second phase of the catalog so we can find the missing information and correct the information that's not there. As most of you probably know, it's easy to go on the catalog and find how to submit suggestions to us that we can vet and put in the catalog. So the conclusions, we want to quote Copernicus and show that we're on his side. He says, to know that we know what we know, and to know that we do not know what we do not know, is true knowledge. The Catalog of Endangered Languages, as we move into phase two, its goal is to achieve true knowledge by obtaining information on the endangered languages that we know that we do not know, that we do not currently know well enough, and thereby produce new knowledge relevant to the catalog's several audiences and to how endangered languages are talked about generally, which is what LCAT is doing now. Join in, please, and help the effort. Mahalo nui, nui la. Yeah, good question. Thanks. Yeah, that's how we do it, right? We only deal with endangered languages. Ethnologue is the very best of anything for all the languages of the world, and so we, like everybody else, rely on their numbers for the total numbers of languages in the world. Obviously, you know, people would tweak ethnologue numbers too if they were looking at, you know, various things, but that's not something we have to worry about too much. Our goal is not to deal with all the languages in the world. We can barely keep up with what we're supposed to do with this. It would be wonderful if someone did have that sort of thing, but I think you know, Ethnologue and other sources can take care of the languages of the world that aren't endangered. I forgot the rest of your question.
Is it problematic to divide your number of endangered languages by their number of total languages?
Well, it probably is, particularly if their number of endangered languages is different from ours. We'd have to look to make sure that their criteria match ours. I think we probably have more people dedicated to trying to get the details, and so we may not be the most accurate in the world, but I think we are. I think Ethnologue, hopefully we can share all of this, and Ethnologue will either like what we do and then perhaps revise, or we'll learn from Ethnologue and perhaps we'll revise. How recent is this, Gary? How recent is this? Have I missed a recent edition?
On Monday.
I did miss it, sorry. I can't wait to go see it. Yes? Yeah, so three sources. The one we hope to get more from is we hope users will submit information that they know about so we can go out and check it out and improve the catalog. That would be the best of all worlds because it would save us from having to do the legwork ourselves on the ground. But we also have regional directors who are supposed to look through the languages in their region and correct the things that aren't there and go out and find out information about other languages that are there. And then we have a team of graduate students who scour the sources that are around, looking for the most recent sources that we can add so that each language can have as many sources as we want. Usually we have, I don't know, 5 or 6 sources for nearly every language and 10 or 15 for some languages. So if there's a very recent dissertation that has very good information about location and speaker numbers or something, we want to find that and add that information. Since we were forced to launch in quite a hurry, we were not able to consult absolutely every source in the world about every language. There must be some really good ones that we're still looking for. So the graduate students are doing a good job, and the regional directors are doing a good job. And by the end of the 2 years, we hope to have, you know, gotten virtually everything that can be gotten in that, in those ways. Did you want to follow up?
Yeah, so I'm wondering, is there a mechanism then for speakers from the community to self-report? Or?
Yes, and it's highly encouraged, yes.
That could be a reliable source that could...
Right, and if they don't report, hopefully we can go and talk to them anyway and at least incorporate whatever they want to tell us. Yeah. Mike.
The threatened and vulnerable languages don't count in the endangered, is that right?
They count. Sean will answer that.
They count.
So that only 46% are even down to vulnerable.
Yeah. I should say this is Mike Krause. I'm very honored he asked me a question. He's my hero because he started all of this. yes?
So if I understand, you have an algorithm in your data collection that would speak to language vitality. And eGIDS, which is what the New Berkeley Anthropology has, also has that. So, and those two algorithms are separate, are independent measures of trying to address the same issue. So if we look at our larger community of language documentation, and funding sources and grant reviewers and such, which numbers should those reviewers be paying attention to?
Well, should pay attention to ours, of course. but they should also pay attention to everybody else's. John, do you want to answer that one? John was highly instrumental in creating our index of vitality.
I would just say that in terms of the way that ours works, we thought it was important to be able to rate each source's information about the vitality of a language. So if we find information from one source that has something about speaker numbers and something about the age of the youngest speakers, then that contributes a rating from that source for that language, as well as all the other sources. And we also like to indicate whether or not we got information about all of our factors so that we could say that, you know, we're certain about this rating versus we're less certain about this other rating. And that's something that I haven't really seen in the other scales.
So that when you look at the certainty scale that goes along, the certainty rating that goes along with the index, the vitality index, it tells you more or less, well, how much information is this figure based on, or how certain can we be based on the information we have at hand. But you know, hopefully there will be a convergence so that if we can learn from the other scales that are around, we can tweak ours, or if they can learn from ours, they can tweak theirs. Hopefully there will be a convergence so that linguists will all be able to, and if we can do it in different ways and still provide useful information, then it's okay to have different ways of doing it too. Yes? Go ahead and then.
How do you rate your source information differently from something that a regional director might find?
We probably don't. We probably let the regional director tell us whether, you know, he or she, based on whatever large network of people they can call on, to tell us whether the source is accurate or not and whether we should rely on it. That's a problem we have. We're pretty much at the mercy of our sources. And so if there's only one source on a language and the person didn't do a good job, then we won't know that and our figures will reflect that. But we hope that, you know, most of the time we're not dealing with, you know, single sources that did bad jobs. We hope we can get, you know, a number of good sources and then have a convergence. Yes.
I would caution in regards to uncontacted languages as automatically qualifying them as highly endangered, because A, there's more always 100% intergenerational transmission,
right,
and it's been precisely contact that has caused the loss of so many languages.
Right.
And here, you know, it's almost like let's send some linguists to those guys kind of a thing, which we know is not going to be the positive effect. And from a Hawaiian perspective, hey, mana kaleo, you know, by automatically putting them in there and saying they're endangered, we're not helping them in terms of the the what we're sending to them, you know, in terms of a spiritual kind of a communication.
Yeah, we're not advocating for people to go out and crash into the jungle and try to, you know, corner these people and force them to talk to us. We go through the Brazilian government, and they won't allow anyone to make these contacts unless they've done it. But we have graduate students who were contracted by the Brazilian government to go into, for one of our students is doing a dissertation right now on Apunsu. This is a group that was simply massacred in 1996, only six survivors. And she's been asked by the government agency to go, and the community accepts her as a member. So she's doing the language documentation and everything else that she can for this one group. But she wouldn't be there if she hadn't been invited and if we weren't doing it right. That's one case where we have good information, but there are many others where we won't be contacting them, and we won't have any information until it becomes available through some other source. Yeah.
I've been working doing language surveys, you know, of our people, and working with speakers. I know there's different levels of speakers. There's creative speakers, those that can compose songs and prayers, and there's fluent speakers, and then there's passive speakers who understand the language but aren't able to speak, and then there's learners. So when you're talking about speakers, you know, like if I was as an end user to put something in, I would go towards the fluent or creative versus those that are passive. What are your feelings on that?
Do you guys want to answer that? We have a whole range of things that talk about kinds of speakers.
So in the LCAT input form, we've got a space for fluent speakers, semi-speakers, second language speakers, and language learners. So if this type of information is available, we can put it into the catalog, and it displays on the Endangered Language Project.
Okay, so do you have like a form that, because I just created the survey on my own, but do you have a standard form that end users can use to?
The way that works is generally users suggest sources to us or comments to us, and then we go look at the source and take what we can from that source and input it ourselves into the form. It's awfully convoluted with a whole bunch of different fields, so we don't necessarily put that out to all the different speakers, although we can make it available to you if you'd like.
And you're invited to send comments on any
right.
any of those fields that are in the thing, and we would be overjoyed to have that. And if there's not a field there that says, you know, how many passive bilinguals there are, if you send us that information, we'll put it in the comment field, and then it'll be directly in the catalog, as long as we can confirm that there's some agreement. We have to confirm all the information because, for accuracy, but also we have to make sure we don't get, one of the things we have to deal with quite often is people want to manipulate the catalog for political purposes. They want something to be entered so that they can then go to their government and say, give us a representative or give us land or whatever. And those are all legitimate things, but it's not our business to be, you know, manipulating languages in order for people to have political agendas served. And so we have to vet everything very carefully.
And Anna just reminded me, we do have the language input form available, and we can send it to you. So you can go through the survey and input all of these different things in the fields, and then send us the form as well as the survey, and we can go through and vet things and put it into the database.
Yeah, please.
There's a way to do that.
Yeah, please send us anything you can.
And we'll also have physical paper input forms available at our office hours tomorrow around noon, I believe, that we can distribute.
We're officially over time, but if you wanted to take one more question, since we have that 10 minutes, it's...
You have time? I guess you can all leave, and anyone wants to ask questions, go ahead. Sean's all set up, so we don't need the 10 minutes. Go ahead. We'll take a few more questions.
Yeah. eligibility criteria are going to be based. So I wonder whether locally endangered languages, endangered languages in a specific language, but in terms of spoken in all the places, do these languages are introduced in the catalog?
Did you guys hear that? Can you answer?
Yeah, do languages that are endangered in one place but not another get included?
Oh yeah, yeah. That's a problem. There are some linguists, Greg Anderson, who try to deal with that. We haven't successfully dealt with it yet. We don't try to say that. You know, let's say there's a large homeland with language being totally viable in every possible way, but there's some small group in some isolated other region where that group is endangered. That information should be available somehow, but we don't deal with it in our catalog. We're not able to yet. And I don't know whether we ever will try to, but it should be available in the linguistic world. And you know, obviously people in some diaspora situation or some small colony or whatever will have many concerns about their language disappearing, even if there is another group that has a very large group that is not in trouble. But our catalog doesn't do anything with it. I wish we could.
Clearly, there's more extinct languages than ethnologue considers, right? I mean, there must be a multitude of languages that disappear without anyone.
We're not looking at ethnologue has only extinct languages in the last 50 years, right? We've tried to list all known. So we listed all extinct languages, the names of which are known. We know a lot of languages are extinct that we can't name. So you could probably add several thousands of extinct languages, but we're only dealing with the ones that really are somehow known to have existed, and you can clearly pin them down. So that's a very artificial number I gave you, that 637, simply because there probably were many, many, many thousands of languages that have become extinct over time.
So my question is, how can you actually give a number then of how language death, how the number of that increases? Because if you don't, I assume that the documentation of language death is it's much better documented now than it was before, right? So how can you compare the rate of language death now as opposed to, I don't know, 100 or even 200 years ago? How can you come up with a precise number?
You mean 100 or 200 years ago, we might not have known of the existence of languages that we now know of today, and so that our figures would be different? I don't think that's a problem for us. I mean, we're simply looking at the subset of the set of languages that we really do know about, and then we've given you some fairly rough numbers. They're not wonderful numbers, but I think they nevertheless do confirm. If you look at different regions, we've known a great deal about the languages of some regions, and we can see that before this totally arbitrary year of 1960 that I picked, you can just see that the rate of disappearance of language just accelerated immensely after that, and even though we knew a great deal about the languages before 1960 in some of those regions. I can't say about the regions where we knew very little, and we've learned a lot recently, but I think it probably holds pretty well on average across the world. Let's talk more. I don't think I answered your question very well.
We've got like 2 minutes. I need to plug in.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Let me get out of here.
All right. Well, thank you again, Lyle.